Morning. You guys made it. You did it. You made it to church. It's not easy to do. So I say it kind of jokingly, but really I want to recognize you for coming. It doesn't matter if you're single. It's not always easy. If you're married, could be there's something different you want to do with your spouse in the morning. If you have kids, then the difficulty just really rises exponentially. So you made it. And that's awesome. I'm excited to learn with you guys today. We're going to learn about what it means to run our race. But first, I'm going to pray. Heavenly Father, I ask that you would fill this room with your Spirit, that you would soften our hearts to learn about running your race, that it would be your words. And we thank you that you're a God that desires a relationship with us. Amen. My name is Dave Thomas. I'm not the lead pastor here, but Jeremy, our lead pastor, he asked me to speak. It was in June, and yesterday, Saturday, I got this alert on my Google phone, or Google calendar on my phone, and it said, I preach tomorrow. I thought, oh no, what am I going to do? No, really, I started preparing like on Wednesday. But I did think for a little bit, why me? And it just, I thought, you know, if I'm reading a book or if I'm somewhere and I'm listening to a speaker, I'd love to know more. So just a quick history about how I got to the stage. I was six. I was in Brookings, South Dakota, where I grew up when I was at Bethel Baptist Church. And I prayed this prayer. I said, Jesus, I need you in my heart. I know that I've sinned, and I can't do this life without you. And then through high school, I went to church. It was easy. It's what we did. And then I went to college, and I wanted to spread my wings and kind of be my own man, and so I realized I have to make this faith my own, or I have to move on and do something different, believe in something different. So through courses I took, or through reading I did on my own, I learned about the different world religions or spiritualities or things that are available, things people have written about. The illustration that really spoke to me, that continued me on this path of being a Christian, was religion as a mountain. And at the top of the mountain is where you want to be, whether that's heaven or nirvana or being reincarnated or, you know, whatever it is. And those five major religions are up there, right? And four of them, Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, and Judaism, the goal is to work as hard as you can, to be the best person you can. But you don't get any help on making it up that mountain to that last resting spot. And then the fifth world religion, Christianity, we have this picture of Jesus coming down the mountain, and he brings us up the mountain with him. So I'm in college, and that kind of cements it for me. I think, yes, all these things I learned as a kid, I'm going to Sunday school. It's not just a product of growing up in a family where church was something that we did. So it's mine now. I get to own this faith. And then I got married, and my beautiful wife's right there, and she kind of like runs the nursery here. She's awesome. I promised her I wouldn't say anything about her, so I'm not going to. You're safe. We started coming to Cornerstone. We joined a small group, and we read through a book called The Case for Christ. It's by Lee Strobel. It's an amazing resource. If you've never read it, I'm pretty sure we would buy you a copy if you want one. Jeremy gives me the thumbs up. So anybody who wants a Case for Christ book, talk to Pastor Jeremy. But we went through it, and if you haven't read it and you don't want me to spoil it, close your ears. Because here's the cliff notes. The author, Lee Strobel, is an atheist, and he wants to prove Christianity is a sham. It's false. Through the book, he talks to all these people who know way more than he does, way more than I do, archaeologists and Bible scholars, people who are Christians and people who aren't. And he realizes there's only one answer that is true. There's only one possibility, and that's that Jesus was real. He came to earth. He died. Then he rose, and then he ascended into heaven. Now I'm here. So my youth, my college, and now my adulthood. I'm really excited to learn with you about what it means to run our race. Because I'm not up here saying I'm an expert. I'm excited to learn with you. And we're going to do that by reading through Hebrews chapter 12, verses 1 and 2. If you don't have a Bible, we have some really nice Bibles in the back there by the earplugs. If you want to go get one, nobody's going to judge you if you do. If you want a better Bible, one that's nicer, you can go get one. Probably won't judge you, but you can do it. We're going to get to Hebrews 12. Hebrews, it's in the back of the New Testament. It's between Philemon and James. And the author's unknown. We think, we meaning Bible scholars that I read and I'm referencing, we think that this was probably a sermon. And I just want you to know what I'm only doing two verses. Okay, this was probably a sermon that was written and given to Hebrews. So it's a clever title. And let's dive into it. Hebrews 12. It says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And when I first read this, I thought this is great. This is a couple of verses about running. And you guys probably look at me and think, perfect. He looks like he's built for 5Ks, 10Ks, marathons. I'm not. And I realized as I studied and learned that this isn't about the physical running. The things I am good at running, let's say a scenario. Honey, there's one more donut. Do you want it? I'm sprinting. Day of the Vikings game's on, I'm running. Okay, that's what I'm good at running. Just going out and running, I'm not great at it. I'm not great at it. But we're going to learn what the unknown author was telling us. We're going to start with the first word, therefore, and I looked it up, and one translation is to connect the dots. To connect the dots. And so what I had to do was read chapter 11 right before it. What is he connecting? What is this guy preaching about? In chapter 11 was this whole verse, whole chapter, about people from the Old Testament. And it essentially reads as a hall of fame of people who did wonderful things through faith in the name of God. And it talks about Noah. You know, he's building the ark before it was raining. It talks about Moses. Moses could have been grown up as a child of the Pharaoh. You know, like the whole feed me grapes, olives, fan me, everything's taken care of, but he chooses to live as a slave because he knows that in the end the fruit from living as a slave as one of God's children is much greater. It talks about Abraham. Abraham's told to go somewhere else. He doesn't know where he's going, but he goes. It takes him like 100 years to have a kid, and there's a lot of trials within that, and then he's supposed to take this son on top of a mountain and sacrifice him. So he starts to do that. God saves him and doesn't make him sacrifice his kid. And it references David and Gideon and Elijah, and it talks about and all these people. So the author's saying, therefore, because of all of these people, he's painting this picture. There's this great cloud of witnesses. And this was kind of weird for me at first, you know, like to picture up there somewhere in the clouds or maybe in heaven, all these people who have gone through life before us. And what he's really referencing or why he's doing this is because history was so important for the Hebrew people. So if you put yourself in their shoes, they've grown up and they've learned their history. And it's rich. And their people was the chosen tribe. That's the people that God was working through to bring fellowship and salvation with the world. So they're really going to cling on to this now. They're going to be paying attention to this author, saying, therefore, listen. Through faith, Abraham. Through faith, Moses. Through faith, David. And on and on. And he starts to paint a picture of all these people who have been there. He's doing this for two reasons. He's saying, one, through faith you can do this. He's saying, two, they're rooting you on. I think for us, this applies. I also think that we can think about it from this perspective. I have a great cloud of witnesses. And my first example would be my grandma Ruth, and she was just this spitfire. And I know that she prayed for me every day. I know it. And I know that she cared deeply for me. And I know I would put her in my great cloud of witnesses. She'd be up in heaven cheering for me. And I also have people who are alive that I would consider to be in my great cloud of witnesses. And I might talk to them a couple times a year. But I know that they are going to ask me hard questions and that they're praying for me, that they're rooting for me. So I'm going to ask you to do something. Maybe it's uncomfortable in a church. It should be something routine for our middle schoolers who are here, maybe high schoolers. But you're going to talk with your elbow partner, which just simply means who's next to you, if you can touch them with your elbow. And you're going to share. I'm going to give you 60 seconds, so it's 30 seconds each. You're going to share about who you think or who's your great cloud of witnesses. And maybe it's people from the Old Testament. Or maybe it's somebody from your life that's living or that's past. If there's nobody sitting next to you, feel free to get up and move and get close. If you don't, I'm not going to call home. I'm not going to put your name on the chalkboard or anything. So elbow share with your partner. You got 60 seconds. We're really doing it. Go. Thank you for participating. I mean, I knew I was going to, I got great wait time. I was going to wait 60 seconds no matter what, but it was great that you guys participated in it. I appreciate that. Thank you. The preacher, he's setting the stage, and he's saying, by faith, you can do this. By faith, people have done this. Look at your rich history. And he's instructing us how to run this race. What does this look like? The next thing he says is, let us lay aside every weight, every sin which clings so closely. Another way it reads is, which so easily entangles, which I like because then I just picture myself tripping and falling, and which... maybe you guys like too. There's a lot of laughter me falling. It's funny. That's okay. But I think it depicts this good picture of what sin can do to us. For the track or the running, the race metaphor, I see the great cloud of witnesses as these people are coming to watch the race. And they're coming and they're showing up and you're warming up and you're getting loose and then the gun's going to sound pretty soon, so you take off your tracksuit. Like there go your sweatpants, your jacket's off, now you got your tank top on, your shorts on, you're ready to run. Because why would you run with all that extra stuff on? Doesn't make sense. And in our lives, it's the same thing. It doesn't make sense for us to run our race, holding on to weight, holding on to sin that slows us down. And the interesting thing is nobody ever had to teach us how to sin. We have Sunday school, and you learn about the Bible, and you learn Bible stories, and we have school, and you learn how to read, and you have to learn how to write, be nice to other people. But you never have sinning 101. Just, it's easy. It's easy to do. So I got to thinking, man, what sins or what weight do I need to throw off? Do I need to leave at the starting line? Do I need to get rid of? And then I thought, well, I only really have like 25, 30 minutes to preach, and I could probably talk about all the things I need to throw off and the sins I need to leave behind. It would take that much time. So I just chose one, and it's like a disease, and it's the disease or the S disease. You guys ever heard of that? No? Okay. When I see my neighbor, and he's out, and he's got this awesome Z-turn mower, I want a better mower than he has. And then when I see this room full of people, I want to be the smartest person in here, and I see Chad Miller, I want to be faster than Chad Miller. It's really this comparison is what I'm talking about. I should just call it a comparison. You guys would have probably cleaned down on that right away. Well, that's something that popped into my head, and I thought, I'm going to start working on this. I'm going to be intentional about it. You guys are my elbow partner. That's why I'm sharing that with you, because we have so much. I do. I shouldn't put that on you guys. I have so much weight, so many sins that I don't need. So I picked one, and I'm going to be intentional about identifying it when it comes up. And I see that awesome Z-turn mower, or I see somebody who's lifting more weights than I am, or uses much bigger words than I have. And I'm going to let it go, and I'm going to leave that at the starting line. You guys are going to share with your elbow partner. Pick one. You can pick two. And you can choose to get really real about what are you going to leave at the starting line. What don't you need that you're holding, that you're carrying on to? That's not helping you in the race. 60 seconds. Go. Thirty seconds. Thanks again for sharing. I really appreciate it. The speaker continues. He goes on, and he says, he's talking about the crowds here, and they're cheering you on. You're a great cloud of witnesses. You've warmed up. You've taken off your tracksuit. That gun's going to sound soon, and you know it. You're getting excited. He says, let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith. I want you to imagine something with me. You can close your eyes. You don't have to. I won't. I'll fall off the stage. You're ready to start, and it's like a road race. There's just a huge group of people there. People are cheering. The gun sounds, and you start running. It feels good, because you've warmed up, and you've gone a few blocks now, and you start realizing that people are turning, people are coming in from different roads, and then you come to a fork in the road, and you don't know which way to go, and there's no signs, and so you just pick, and soon it's been a half hour, and you're running, and you're tired. You've ran for a half hour before, but oh, you're tired. You don't know where to go. Wouldn't that be terrible? Running a race that's not marked out? It's aimless. It's exhausting. And as a metaphor, I've certainly done that in my life. Maybe you guys can think about a time where you've been like, ah, oh, you just feel like you don't have a course that's set before you. And what the preacher's saying here is he's saying, listen, Hebrew people, you have this great faith. You can do it. And I have better news. Jesus has set a course for you, so when that gun sounds, you know when to turn. And when the next turn comes up, you know where to go. And maybe now all of a sudden there's like water breaks and porta potties that are on the way. Really good things for a race. And way different than being aimless or just lost. What a contrast that is. So he's saying you do this by looking at Jesus. And sometimes I can take things literal and maybe in an effort to be funny, but I thought, wouldn't that be silly if everyone's just running and they're doing this? Like looking towards, I'm looking towards Jesus, author, I'm doing it. It's all good. But that's not what he means. And I don't really have a prescription for what it does mean. I can take it and apply it to my life, and I'm trying. And so my interpretation of this part is be intentional. And we're going to be on different spectrums on where we're at in this place. What does that mean to look at Jesus? Maybe you're someone who's similar to me that grew up going to church and you accepted Jesus a long time ago. And you're going to be in a different spot than somebody. Maybe you're here and you're like, you know, I've heard of Jesus. He's a good guy. Or maybe you kind of were into Jesus a while ago and now you're not. You're somewhere on the spectrum, but it fits for all of us. Okay, we're all at that spot. And we need to be intentional about how we're going to look to Jesus. Why? So we can stay on the course that's set before us. So I have built-in accountability. There's, 120 people here. You guys are all my accountability partners. Congratulations. Thank you for doing that with me. So the next time you see me, you can say, Dave, how's your race going? What are you doing to make sure that you're staying pure in your marriage, Dave? You're going to be the people that are going to ask me those questions. Are you reading the Bible? What are you learning? I'm going to put a thing on my Google calendar that I talked about earlier, and it's going to alert me about when I need to do some of my study. I'm not always good at doing that on my own. So there's a couple ideas. You could get an accountability partner. You could join a small group. You could get the YouVersion Bible app on your phone and get all sorts of plans. They'll send it to you. They make it super easy to get involved with the Word. But you need to, well, you should verbalize it. You should tell somebody. So we're going to elbow share that. What are you going to do? What are you going to do to make sure that you are setting yourself up to look at Jesus so you can stay on the course that's set before you? 60 seconds. Go. What are you going to do to make sure you're looking at Jesus? Seconds. Thanks for sharing. I know I always learn so much when I talk to other people. Even when I think I know a lot about a subject, I'm going to learn so much more when I share. And then when we verbalize something, it helps with our accountability. The next part of the slide says, it's referring to Jesus, and he calls him the author and the perfecter of our faith. And another way to translate this would be the beginning and the end, the Alpha and the Omega, which should sound familiar. This was intentional wording by the preacher, because remember, he's talking to the Hebrew people. And he wants to make the spark for them that's emotional, because they're going to remember, and they've been told since they were little and taught that they're God's chosen people. And God referred to himself as Yahweh. It means I am, you know, the beginning and the end. He's always been, always will be. So these are intentional words that are saying Jesus is the beginning and the end. Jesus is the author and the perfecter. Jesus is God. And that is maybe hard for some of the Hebrew people, because some of them are saying he was not our Messiah because they expected something different. When the first time I read it, this could work, I thought Jesus is the one who wrote my faith out. And he's going to, the more that I seek him, the more closer to perfection my faith will become. And then I thought, well, I'm never going to be perfect. So maybe that ultimate perfection is when I die and I go to heaven. Speaker continues, he says, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. I have to backtrack 1 second. The word endured is up here. And in the last slide, he said, let us run with endurance. And I had a bunch of jokes about how I can't run far or fast. But endurance, what's being referenced here is trials. And often in the Bible, when you see the word endurance, it's talking about trials. And again, he's reflecting back on that chapter 11 Hall of Fame. And he talks about people who were beheaded, who were stoned, who were jailed, etc. Those are examples of enduring. I don't think that we'll go through those trials. But we will go through trials. And they could be from family, friends, coworkers, or somebody you sit next to at the Timberwolves game or at the coffee shop. We're going to face those trials. And he's saying, you can do it and you have to stick with it. Remember, by faith, people have done this. So you can do it too. Who for the joy, talking about Jesus, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. And when I read that part, troubled is maybe too strong, but I felt weird about it because I was thinking about Jesus' life, and the first thing I thought of when I thought of for the joy that was set before him, he's in the desert and he's fasting 40 days and 40 nights. Doesn't sound like joy to me. His disciples, his closest friends, let him down again and again. That doesn't sound like joy to me. Now, eventually he's betrayed, and he's put on a cross, and he's naked. And people are making fun of him. I thought, that doesn't sound like joy. And I realized something. You're the joy. I'm the joy. When he came to earth, and he knows these things are coming. He does. And it's worth it. Because he sees you. He sees me. And we're the joy. Despising the shame, which I had trouble with that word, but it just means despite. Despite the shame. Because it was the most shameful death that the Romans could think of. Strip you down naked, that seems shameful, humiliating. I'd never want that. Put on a cross, you die slow, people can make fun of you. And he thought that you were totally worth it. I think even more than that, it brought him joy, because there's a difference between something being worth it and something bringing you joy. One way that I stay intentional or keep myself on track is through song. A lot of my life is tied to songs, and I can remember like, oh, that song came out, I was a freshman in high school, and this was happening. There's this new song, and it's called Death is Arrested. And it just talks about this. It talks about the joy that Jesus had. And how we're that joy. The last phrase says, Jesus, he's seated at the right hand of the throne of God. You know, my journey with that phrase, again, was like, that's great. The Trinity, oh, it's, what a hard thing to grasp. But he's seated at the right hand of the throne of God. And then what I learned is in the Old Covenant just being the agreement that God had with the Hebrew people, there was always a high priest who could take an animal, kill it, and then take that blood. And what that did was for all the Hebrew people, it made it okay between God and them again. They could fellowship, which applicably for the Hebrew people meant they're going to have greater wealth, military gain. You know, all the good things you can think of, they're going to be there. And living in that connection with God was there. But they had to go through their high priest. He's the one who had to do it. And what the author is saying here should just turn their world upside down. Because no longer is the old covenant in place, because Jesus is the new covenant, and now he is our high priest, and he's seated at the right hand of the throne of God. What does that mean for us? It means we can talk right to him. And I can say, Jesus, I sin because I fill in the blank. And then he's just going to say, Dave Thomas is forgiven. And in Jeremiah, which is referenced all through Hebrews, God's speaking and he says, I will remember their sin no more. And I really do hold on to that every time I say, Jesus, I've sinned, fill in the blank, I need your forgiveness. Can you imagine that power? It's hard to do as a person. And so he's telling these Hebrew people, that is what is now available. And you have a new covenant. And we have the new covenant. And you don't have to have somebody talk to God for you. You can do it yourself. To close, we did, I think, fun things. We elbow shared. We said these things out loud. You guys have a great cloud of witnesses. And you got to name them and you got to hear about others. We talked about the sins or the weights that we're going to throw off. You talked about it. And we talked about what does it mean to set your eyes on Jesus. We didn't talk about the trials that we'll have to endure, but you can imagine what they are. Maybe you can think on some that you have. So my goal, and you can adopt this with me, is I'm going to enjoy the run. And when I'm facing that trial, somebody's going to tell me, you got this. You have a great cloud of witnesses. Throw off your sin, Dave. Cut it out. Turn your eyes on Jesus. How are you doing that? Yes, these hard things are happening. Embrace it. Love it. Run your race. Now when you go home and you talk to your neighbor about what you learn in church, which I'm sure you always do, or sometimes do, maybe never, but if you do, you can tell them, I'm going to run my race. I'm going to run my race. I'm going to pray to close. Heavenly Father, thanks that you're seated at the right hand of the throne of God, that you've spilled your precious blood as our ultimate offering. I ask that as we leave and as we encounter our everyday lives, that you would imprint on us the things that we take away from today. Thank you for having a reckless love that's going to chase us. It's never going to quit. And as we're about to bring forward our offerings, Lord, I ask that you would be with Cornerstone as we decide where that money goes, that that money would bring praise and glory to you and your kingdom. Amen. The ushers are going to come forward and they're going to pass the offering bucket. If you're a guest, we don't want you to give any money. Our regular tenders, our members do a great job of giving, but we do want your connection card because you matter. And we want to run our race with you.